crunch time in Washington, D.C. The House is going to vote sometime this evening on the debt deal between Kevin McCarthy and Joe Biden. Let's go to CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy. So I watched the Republican news conference held by the mainstream Republicans inside the Capitol, and then the rump contingent outside the Capitol, which says they are not going to vote for this, not no way, not no how. So how is this vote going to go tonight?
Well, look, the leadership of the Republican Party is saying that they expect that this bill will pass the House, that it will pass the Senate, that it will become law. There will be conservative Republicans and progressive Democrats who withhold their support. It'll be interesting to see where the numbers fall tonight. You will likely see centrist Democrats and Republicans joining together on a bipartisan way to send this bill to the Senate. That's the leadership's expectation. But through this day, you'll have an opportunity for conservative Republicans and progressive Democrats to air their frustrations with this agreement. Republicans will argue it doesn't do enough, that Speaker McCarthy didn't get enough concessions from President Biden in terms of overall spending and debt, but I should say deficit reduction in a way of getting the debt under control. And Democrats will argue that the president gave away too much, that in particular, some of the work requirements that have been affected by this bill for people over the age of 49 and on the program we used to call food stamps, that SNAP, nutritional assistance program, will do harm to people. The White House position is that it's working to educate progressive Democrats. The president's budget director was up on Capitol Hill this morning to brief Democrats in the House on what's in this bill. Shalanda Young said yesterday that you don't tell members of Congress what to do. You help them understand why they should support a package.
Exactly. So what has been accomplished? I understand this was scored by the congressional budget writers, and you do save some money. How much do you save?
Well, the CBO score looks at a 10-year projection. So it's really, this bill affects, it has enforceable caps for the next two fiscal years. Mm-hmm. So the 10-year projection is showing a very, very, very modest impact, which is giving juice to conservative Republicans who say that for all this fight, for all this energy, Kevin McCarthy's not achieving all that much. But, the leaders on both sides are acknowledging the fact that this is a circumstance that's coming out of divided government, that it is a bipartisan compromise, that with Chuck Schumer in the Senate, as leading the Senate, and Joe Biden at the White House, Republicans were not going to achieve nearly what they hoped to achieve. Mm-hmm. They did pass in the House a bill that raises the debt ceiling but repeals the Inflation Reduction Act, sharply reduces non-defense discretionary spending, and that was not going to be acceptable to the Senate Democratic leader or the president. And so in order for anything to become law, to avoid catastrophe in the economy, some compromise had to be reached. And that's why both sides, the Speaker's office and the White House, are saying that this was a win. And you'll have centrist members of both parties who will support it. This has happened before. We've seen it before. The country's come to the brink of crisis deadline. And in the end, modest agreement is reached. But what is still outstanding is how to deal with a $31.5 trillion debt,
yeah,
the entitlement crisis the country faces. These have not been addressed in this fight, and it leaves it for another day.
Well, now, when is that other day? There is an ongoing budget process, right? The budget committees are working on the various departments. Is anybody actually going to address let's just take Social Security. I mean, is anybody going to address that problem so the payments don't end up being cut automatically?
Speaker McCarthy said this morning he's going to work to set up some sort of a budget commission, which is actually something that leaders tried to achieve a decade ago.
Yeah.
The Simpson-Bowles Commission, which was meant to look at the overall federal spending picture and present a compromise. They called it, if you remember this, they called it a super committee.
The super committee.
The super committee was supposed to look at these structural problems that we have as a country in terms of our spending and our revenues and make recommendations to the Congress that would be binding on both houses if they accepted it. And it basically landed with a thud. There wasn't the political capital to embrace any kind of structural reforms. And so Speaker McCarthy's now talking about sort of restarting some sort of a budget commission that might look at this stuff. But it has always been the third rail of American politics, and perhaps more so now with former President Trump telling fellow Republicans that entitlements should be off the table. Prior to this, Republican leaders were talking about ways to restructure Medicare and Social Security in a way that it was politically vulnerable to them because Democrats described them as cuts.
Yeah.
It's pretty basic. What Democrats want to do is raise taxes to continue to pay for these programs. And what Republicans want to do is keep taxes where they are and essentially restructure the benefits so that more of the burden is placed on the individual recipients rather than the government.
Right. Now, in bills this big, there's sometimes they seem to sneak little Easter eggs in. Are there any little Easter eggs or little monsters lurking in the text of this thing? Do you know?
Well, it depends on how you feel about environmental regulations and permitting reform, and in particular, whether you're a supporter of a pipeline that exists in West Virginia and Virginia.
There's a pipeline in this bill?
There is a pipeline. In fact, several pages in this 99-page bill are devoted to this Mountain Valley Pipeline, that is a natural gas pipeline that is has really very little to do with the national debt, but it is part of this package. This happens from time to time as a sweetener to get both sides on board and as a vehicle that essentially seems must pass. Sometimes favors are done. This is horse trading, and it's classic Washington lawmaking. Mm-hmm. This particular measure, however, is opposed by environmentalists. They say that this project has been held up because of environmental concerns, and Congress is going to run right over those concerns to see to it that it's approved.
And I saw a news item indicating that this also includes some defunding of the ATF, which is, you know, tasked with tracking illegal guns.
Well, I don't know the particulars on that. I can tell you that some of what this bill does is it certainly claws back certain spending that was devoted in the Inflation Reduction Act for the IRS. It claws back COVID funding that had gone unspent for the last couple of years, and it establishes caps on non-defense discretionary spending. But the particulars will be filled in by the appropriators in Congress between now and the end of September at the end of the fiscal year. The one thing that the White House budget director is touting about this is that it is meant to avoid a government shutdown crisis in the fall.
Right. Well, my listeners know I'm a broken record on this, but I'll ask you about my pet peeve, and that was the whole decision to cut IRS. I mean, they came out in the Republican Conference and said specifically, we made sure there would be no money for enforcement. I couldn't believe it when I heard that, because if you want to balance the budget, why wouldn't you enforce collecting taxes from people who owe taxes? Can you explain that to me?
Well, I'll be honest with you. You know, if the Republicans are saying there's no money for enforcement, that's not a fact. The fact is that in the Inflation Reduction Act, $80 billion was approved by Congress over the 10-year window to ramp up IRS enforcement. The White House argues that there is a lot of money that's left on the table for the government because the IRS doesn't more aggressively pursue what the White House calls tax cheats.
Right.
And they have academic research that says that the wealthy people use certain, not just loopholes, but they essentially violate the law by filing returns that are faulty, and it requires IRS experts to go in and get that money. The Republicans believe that with as much money as the Congress in the last year devoted to this effort, that ultimately these IRS agents would not just be going over wealthy people, after wealthy people, but after middle-class people and small business owners. And so as part of this compromise, the White House did agree to redirect about $20 billion of that $80 billion that had been approved last year to other agencies. So it allows Republicans to argue that they're capping spending. It allows the White House to argue that some of that money will be redirected to agencies so that they can move forward with other priorities that they might have, other projects that they might have. The workers at those agencies can see the raises that they believe they're entitled to. And in the end, it is a compromise, but there will still be additional money for the IRS over the next decade.
Well, that's something anyway. Stephen Portnoy, thank you.
You bet.
Your Daily Dose of Kindness. It's brought to you by Robert W. Baird. Yellowstone actor Cole Hauser is used to playing a tough guy, but off screen, one of his most important roles is helping the children of the military special forces. CBS's Catherine Herridge has the story.
His Yellowstone character, Rip Wheeler, is the quintessential cowboy.
You want to fight somebody? You come fight me!
It's a world away from Cole Hauser's personal passion, the Special Operations Warrior Foundation.
You could attach yourself to almost any charity. Why yeah. Special Operations?
I'm a big fan of second chances for kids when they lose a family member. This is a huge loss for them.
Since 1980, the foundation has provided scholarships to nearly 1,100 children who've lost a parent serving in special operations. The charity recently extended the scholarships to special operators who lose a spouse.
Honestly, I didn't know what I was going to do.
Retired Green Beret Lou Houck's two children are among the first recipients. After his wife, Sydney, died of cancer, Houck became a single dad with no savings for college. Then the foundation stepped in.
What does it mean to have that burden lifted?
Honestly, it feels like love.
Hauser's unwavering loyalty, like his character Rip Wheeler, began with this ring, gifted by his late grandfather, Milton Sperling, a Hollywood producer and a World War II Marine.
I think it's as good as it gets as a human, like just the human element of wanting to help.
An enduring promise to ease the burden on military families. Catherine Herridge, CBS News, Tampa, Florida.
Have you seen Yellowstone, the show?
No, I have not.
I haven't watched it either, but apparently it's just the best.
Is it?
Okay. Yeah, it's really good.
Oh, you watch it?
I've watched one episode. Oh. Holly's watched them all. Oh. And every time I come, it was on back to back to back to back, all episodes from Friday through Monday. I saw the first episode. I was like, whoa, Holly, this is a little racy.
Yeah.
What's going on
there? I don't know why Holly's
watching.
Yeah,
it's like
watching.
Sopranos meets Cowboys. Kind of.
That's a good description.
Plus a lot of Bozeman, a lot of Montana. I get to see a lot of Montana there.
Nice.
So.
7:48, and now from the Gian Ursula Show, here's G. Scott.
Hey, good morning.
Did you hear yesterday's debate about renting out your backyard pool to perfect strangers?
Yeah, I've been hearing about this app, and I've been hearing there have been neighbors that were against something like this. And
they didn't want undesirables in their neighborhood.
I mean, I don't know if... Whoa!
We tried to define that yesterday with Mickey, Colleen. And I think we were dancing around what it actually means.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is... You know, what I was saying on the show yesterday, because we had Mickey on the show, right? And I think that sometimes when we talk on the radio or we talk on social media, we have to have this stance, right, on where we are. And in this case, we have to say things like, sure, you know what? You shouldn't be against that. You know, somebody is enjoying a pool and being able to do that. It's their right, their own home. You should be able to do that. That ain't how I am. I'm going to keep it a buck with y'all. Keep it 100, that is, Dave.
Got it.
I am going to tell you, look, neighbor, I don't want all these different people in my neighborhood. Every single weekend, you change it up. There's cars parked in front of my house. I don't know whose car that is. And then if anything that happens at 10 o'clock, Dave, you know, I'm sure you know, people jumping in the pool after 10 o'clock at night. Bad. What happens, Dave?
They drown.
They don't drown.
Wow.
Man, Dave. Wow. Let's get back on track here.
They're dead.
But you know, the splishing and splashing at 10 o'clock at night is different than the splishing and splashing at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, you know, I'm cool with the kids. I love hearing the kids. That's great. That's awesome. That's fantastic. The problem is those kids got to get rides, right? And it's going to be the adults. And it's going to be all kinds of stuff. So... I don't want it next to me. If you want it next to you in Mercer Island, you go ahead and do it.
How is it different than your neighbor inviting friends and family over every weekend to enjoy the pool?
Because, let's be realistic, most neighbors don't invite everyone over every single weekend. That's just realistic.
Yeah.
Right? And so
but
when
they're
you
not
going to
rent their pool every single weekend either.
If you have an Airbnb in the summertime in Seattle, your window's small.
But that's
you
got to
get it done.
We're talking about a section of your house.
Right. A section
you're
of your house.
You're still living in your house. You're not going to rent out a section of your house every weekend if you're still living there.
The pool, right? Why would you not? You want to take advantage of that.
So you can use it too?
I mean, they might want to use it, but my point is...
Uh-huh.
I don't want you in my neighborhood splishing and splashing all the time and all of these different folks coming in here, parking in this area. And you know some folks going to throw some trash out on the ground. I'm going to pick it up. I have become Stanley in Friday, right? I am the person.
What if one of your neighbors, let me interrupt. What if one of your neighbors, because you did delivery for a long time. You did DoorDash.
Yeah.
What if one of your neighbors was like, you know what? You're constantly coming and going. I hear your car start up. I hear you pull it. I'm done with all the car noise, G. Enough. Stop running your business out of your own driveway. You wouldn't want your neighbor doing that, right? When do neighbors have a say over what you do? Unless you have an HOA. If you want an HOA and you want to spend money every month paying into that so your neighbors can tell you what to do, go for it. But I don't think you'll like it.
I want to take this time right now since we got a minute left. I'd like to apologize to a neighbor that I had back in the, the early 2000s when I was living in West Seattle, when I was doing car detailing.
Oh.
And I would bring a whole bunch of cars to the backyard and I'd be cleaning cars back there. And this neighbor was be just so mad. And I'd be like, I do whatever I want on my property. And the few times she called the police.
What?
Oh, yeah. She called the police.
She called the police because you were detailing cars?
He's running a business.
What was her name?
I don't remember. But here's my point. I don't know who she is. I don't know where she is today. But if I had her in front of me right now, I'd apologize. Because me doing that in the back of my house was terrible.
You've gotten
that
old and suburban, haven't you?
I've just gotten, you know, it's getting better, right? we get older and like I would not want me as a neighbor when I was in my 20s. I was an awful human being. You come to my house and ask for sugar, you ain't getting it. You know what I mean?
So you would have kicked you out of the neighborhood.
I for sure would have kicked me out. And I would have called the police on me.
Gee, I'm
It
surprised.
Ain't got nothing to do with skin color either. No, I was a jerk.
Here I stand, alone, day two, supporting the backyard pool rental app. Wow. I never thought I'd be here.
I can't talk about it because I grew up surrounded by two pools and a tennis court.
So yeah.
There was noise all the time.
Oh, you lived a good life.
Yeah. 7:54.
Nobody calls the cops on Dave.
Seattle's Morning News. This is Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien and Chris Sullivan. Newspapers in Russia are asking questions like, what is this war for? As there is yet another drone attack, this time apparently on some oil facilities. Let's go to CBS UN correspondent Pamela Falk. Pamela, what do we know about these latest drone strikes?
Yeah, we know that they are exposing Russia's vulnerabilities, Dave. They are fueling, as you mentioned, a criticism of the military. The drones attacked an apartment building in Moscow yesterday. Residents heard explosions, and the mayor of Moscow later confirmed it was a drone attack. They're still looking into where they're from. The Ukrainians say it's absolutely not them. They say they're not directly involved. And so I don't want to make a comparison, but it's like, Russia has the Wagner Group, a separate military, which are really mercenaries and quite brutal. And there is this Russian-led expat, in other words, people who have left the Russians who have left the military that formed a force and say they're responsible. But no one, the U.S. still hasn't said where these drones are coming from, and they're in Russian hands. So they are accusing Ukraine, but no evidence yet.
Okay, but I mean, I assume that we know, right? Because we have blanket surveillance going on over that area.
Yeah, U.S. has not said it. I mean, the White House hasn't said anything. Congress hasn't said anything. I mean, people are worried about an escalation. But on the other hand, it's exposing Russia to realizing that they're not immune while a war is going on. And so, I mean, Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, said yesterday, look, we're not behind it, but we certainly welcome the idea that there, if it's not on civilians, that they are too, they are also feeling the effects of the war. So, you know, they're clearly saying, well, what does it mean to have a counteroffensive? What does it mean to be constantly? I mean, Ukraine is just under constant drone attacks. And this has happened now in Kyiv in the last few days, several attacks. And each one either kills quite a few people or injures a lot and certainly displaces Ukrainians. And so yesterday, what was interesting was the UN nuclear watchdog chief came to the UN about the fact that there is an assumption that this counteroffensive is beginning soon by Ukraine. They waited for some of the weapons to come in, mainly tanks and the Patriot systems, the missile defense systems. And there's the largest nuclear power plant in Europe is in the middle of this fighting zone and has been has been, and the electricity has been knocked out 7 times. Wow. And so they're very worried about a meltdown that would affect, you know, like Chernobyl in the past, which was also in Ukraine. It would affect so many people with nuclear fallout. And so that one, and it's now under Russian hands. Russia took the plant early in the war last February and has been doing all sorts of things, including putting military people on the roofs of the 6 reactors and terrorizing some of the staff. I mean, can you imagine a nuclear power plant operator working with a gun to their head?
No.
So, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's very, very dangerous. And
are we assuming now that this spring offensive is underway?
Well, there's certainly indications. Ukraine says for security reasons, they're not going to say exactly when it starts, where it's going. But yes, it certainly, from all the military analysts we've spoken with and the U.S. government, it seems to have somewhat begun, but they haven't declared it begun.
Is there any danger of this going too far and provoking Russia into an overreaction?
Absolutely. I mean, Russia is a nuclear power. I mean, it's David and Goliath, Dave. It's a big, one of the largest military powers in the world. And little Ukraine without foreign boots on the ground, which is what the U.S. is trying to avoid. But it now has much more sophisticated air defense systems and a lot better defense equipment and military equipment from around the world. And the U.S. finally agreed to allow for the training on F-16s, which hasn't really started. I mean, they haven't gotten and up to speed yet on the F-16s, but that's happening pretty soon. And so what they're trying to do is get this military in Ukraine totally up to speed and training them around other NATO countries so that they can operate this equipment. But if you remember when we first spoke, a year ago when the war started, now into its second year, it had everybody, a lawyer, doctor, journalist. I mean, everybody picked up a, gun and went to service. And you see them every day on the internet that this person died or this person lost a leg,
yeah.
Trying to defend themselves. And so getting the military to be a totally professional military has been a work in progress. And now it certainly could get worse, but the combination, this is the assessment watching this for so long, the combination of all of the sanctions on Russia, even though they're looking for other countries to sort of bail them out, the world isolation of Russia, the sanctions, the inability to sell things or buy things, and the consternation of the world that they just keep killing civilians and that there's an arrest warrant for Putin himself for kidnapping children, it may bring, the general sense is that it may bring Russia to a bargaining position, at least to try to talk peace. Now, as of yesterday, Ukraine and the U.S. and European allies are trying to get backing for gathering before a NATO meeting in July, a peace summit without Russia. In other words, get the rest of the world on board to see what they can do to pressure for more for peace, because this story doesn't end well, Dave. I mean, they are a nuclear power. If Putin feels boxed into a corner, who knows what could happen? I mean, they've already made nuclear threats for the full year.
CBS's Pamela Falk. Pam, thank you.
Absolutely.
8:48. Now, Here's Cairo Radio's Mickey Gomez, who has apparently survived the upside down. And
this is very true. Look at you,
didn't
Dave.
Didn't get eaten. I just read the Wikipedia article.
Oh, okay.
Did you watch Stranger Things?
Wow.
That is so not on brand for you.
Well, Stranger Things is set in the 1980s, for those who don't know, and it centers around the residents of a fictional town of Hawkins, Indiana, and they're plagued by a hostile alternate dimension known as the Upside Down after a human experiment, experimentation facility opens a gateway between it and the normal world. And there's like four seasons of Stranger Things on Netflix, if you haven't seen it. A fifth one is coming out next year.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but until then, fans can enjoy the Stranger Things, the experience here in Seattle, because it's in town for the whole summer, thanks to Netflix experience and Fever. And the really cool thing is that the creators of Stranger Things, the Duffer Brothers, wrote this event, which transports you all the way to Hawkins, Indiana. And I was able to speak with Netflix experience spokesperson Isis Arias, and she gives us a sneak peek into what to expect.
You go through your incredibly unique experience through Hawkins Lab, where you get to be the hero of your own adventure.
So without giving too much away, the minute you arrive, the greeter gives you a color-coded wristband, and there's meaning behind it, and she explains.
Your sleep quality as a part of what Hawkins Lab is testing. And of course, when you go into the lab, you have to be put into your color category to see what kind of powers you might unlock.
And so it is very interactive the minute you walk into the lab.
In order to really bring this to life, it is immersive in a very unique way where you're interacting with people that are a part of this experience and really making you feel like you are jumping right in. You're walking into these really iconic set spaces, and when the actors interact with you, you're in it. So we hope people can really immerse themselves.
And once you ward off the Demogorgons in the Upside Down, which you really do, you walk into the Upside Down, and then the Demogorgons, you put on these 3D shades, the Demogorgons come at you, and then you see Eleven, who is one of the characters there, and you have to participate with her. I won't give much away. You walk through the final door, and that's where the experience ends.
This is actually the area that you end up in that has some of our iconic environments from the show. You can eat pizza at Surfer Boy Pizza and get ice cream from Scoops, enjoy the buyer's living room, hang out and take some photos, get up and close with Vecna, and get some really awesome merch.
So I was mom of the year. I was mom of the year for like 45 minutes throughout this entire experience. Okay. And then we walked in to the merch area. I thought there's no way I'm going to buy anything. I spent $200 the merch department.
Holy
I
cow.
Really did. Even I walked
it's quality
out.
Quality merch or
it's,
because?
No, it was quality merch. Okay. It was from the 80s
Ooh.
Or the 1900s, as my daughter likes to say. Look, this is from the 1900s. Mom, did you wear this? And I'm like, the 1980s. 80s, let's get this right.
Yes.
So if you are looking for something really cool to do with your kids, take them to Stranger Things, the experience. It is a lot of fun.
You said they gave you 3D glasses. So are these live actors who are there, or is this an image on a screen? Or
it
what
is both, which is really cool. And at one point, there is a character that plays, one of the main characters, Eleven. There's a real human actress in front of you. And then without you even realizing it, it switches to Eleven on the screen, but you're wearing the 3D glasses. So when that transfer happens, it's like, wait a minute, where'd that human go? That's the real Eleven. And you're a part of it. And I mean, wow. You got it. She's speechless.
I wonder
speechless
she spent $200.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
how old are your kids?
12 and G will be 12 soon. And then Javi's 15.
And you didn't think that it was too scary for them?
No, they're the ones that introduced us to Stranger Things. But I will tell you, if you have children who are 5 and under, they will not be allowed in.
Yeah.
And anyone under the age of 14 has to be accompanied by an adult.
I imagine so.
If you have a 5-year-old and they're a big fan of the show, unfortunately, they're not going to be able to experience this because there is bad language. They do cuss, and they do have, you know, some you know, they're killing Demogorgons, and that in itself is like kind of scary.
Did you emerge with special powers yourself that you can reveal to us at this time?
They do. Well, I did. We did have to do this a lot, which is I was in the category where we had to use our minds to move things. So,
really?
Yes, I do. I did find out I've got some special powers.
Wow. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad you're here in one piece.
Well, thank you very much. You can get all the details on how to, you know, purchase your tickets and whatnot. And you can see our pictures online at mynorthwest.com.
Mickey Gomez. Thank you, Mickey.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News, the podcast. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. You can find our podcast weekday mornings right at 9:30.
And if you subscribe, you will never miss the Daily Dose of Kindness.